Hello, hello. What's up, good people? Yeah, we've got a lot to celebrate. A lot to celebrate for Wonga, for me, and obviously not for Matt. That's all the two of them on the bottom. But as you can see, we've got Wonga Dengue. We've got Stelo, Lolo, Kale, not so different. And then, of course, we've got Moutinho, our resident short Portuguese Englishman down there. So, what's up, gentlemen?
What works?
How's it going? How's it going, everyone? Yeah. How's it going? I actually even know that Matt, how do your team play on the weekend? I actually didn't even know.
Wow. We lost. It wasn't as memorable as your own loss. It was a 1-0 defeat.
You lost?
Yeah, I lost to West Ham, yeah.
Oh, I like you, man.
Testing. Can you guys hear me? Is that better?
Sorry.
Hello?
Sorry,
it's a bit better. Okay.
The London power is shifting, Oaks. The London powers are shifting. Just letting you guys know that.
Testing.
I mean, what are you moving from fifth to fourth? I don't understand. Yeah,
they are shifting. Hey, when you shift, you don't jump. It's shifting.
Isn't West Ham the number one team in London? Okay, Chelsea's the number one team in London. Then West Ham's number two, right?
Yeah, for now.
And then Tottenham.
For now.
Or Tottenham and then Arsenal. Oh, you're number four in London a lot, Wanga. You're not even number four in the UK.
Wonga, don't let the man distract you, Wonga. The powers are shifting.
As Villa got cheeky as well.
He's trying to detract what happened on the weekend, and he's trying to make it seem like you're the worst side in London. Meanwhile, we know Man United are the worst side in Manchester.
There's only two of us.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's only two of them. That's what doesn't count. It doesn't help us at all.
Still counts. They're the worst of something. There's two. That's even worse because there's only someone else to beat, and they can't do that.
It's a very strange way to look at that.
We smacked Tottenham. We smacked Aston Villa. And I was just waiting for the other guys. So I think Arsenal's on a good on in terms of London power shifting. I think it's on a good run.
Aston Villa's good in London.
Arsenal only just went past Brentford. So Brentford was a player London team.
Yes, exactly.
The startup team.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Yeah. No, it's fair. It's fair. I'm not going to concede that's fair.
Yeah, I think we've got to kind of frame these things. Arsenal had a fairly good weekend, but the league table is still what it is.
We're having a good run. We're on a good run. I'm not going to even downplay that. Arsenal's on a good run. We're on a good run.
But you are right, Matt. The league table is what it is, and Arsenal have the same amount of points as Man United.
That's true.
That's true.
Yep. Yes, of course.
Yep. And like Pums is saying...
But you say, of course, like it would be something we would all assume.
Look at Pums' comment there. 5-0 slap. Bah! Five star. So but let's get into it, gentlemen. We've taken the time here for the introduction. We've touched on the fact of the London side. So let's open up for the first game that we did see. And that was Arsenal versus Aston Villa. Wonga Dengue, you're very happy. And you started celebrating. It was like a pre-birthday gift for you. By the way, happy birthday. And also, gentlemen, remind me that we need to do this shirt giveaway later. So just remind me to do that. But Wonga, kick us off with this Arsenal sort of chat and how the game went for you.
Now, look, I think when I watched it, I had this...
Cheers, Matt.
Hey.
Oh, yeah, it goes. Guys, I think they're little advertisements there. listen,
sponsored by that section was sponsored by Darling Brew and Devil Speed Lager.
Now, please, if you guys are gonna do it right, please. Okay,
we should have like all the guys shift and then all that lager you guys are advertising must come on the side. They have its own banner, hey Claudio.
Yeah, I think
just
so.
Like they do on the TV. but yeah, look, watching the Arsenal game, I mean, I looked Aston Villa the first, I don't know if anyone watched it, but the first 20 minutes, I thought Aston Villa were very relaxed, you know, and I think that's, it kind of shows what people sort of, or what teams think of Arsenal now, you know, because last season and the season before, Aston Villa would have. Like last season, Aston Villa. I think we lost to them, and they came on and they put a lot of effort into it. But now it looks. I may be wrong. I'm just. I'm not. I'm just. You know, assuming. But it looked like they, you know, they thought, okay, this would be a comfortable one. They have a chance of, you know, they felt that they had a chance of, you know, winning it, but they didn't think they'd require that much effort because the passes they were playing, you know, the very risky things they were doing in the beginning there. And that sort of, you know, gave me confidence because Arsenal also playing different to what they've been playing. Even I'd say the first couple games in the season is that they look like they want to win now. And I think that's what I'm enjoying about watching them now. It looks like they want to win. Lacazette started the game. And again, he put on a very good shift. Like it was almost like he just took the same guy that just came on the previous game and, you know, just pressed continue on him. And he gave the same sort of performance. I mean, Aubameyang went on. I don't know if he is injured currently, Aubameyang, but he was running hard and he came off limping a bit. Eh? I don't know if he was.
Sorry, Wonga, I just want to interrupt you there. You can continue. But see, this is how you do a plug-in for an advertisement. Pumlani saying, Arsenal playing good footy. It seems like it's coming together with a castle. Gentlemen, take up notes there. Matt.
You know, not all of us have that kind of gift, but that natural.
We have a gift, Pumlani. Well done, eh?
Yeah. So if you do courses or classes, you know, sign us up.
Sorry, Wonga, as you were, yeah.
Yeah, look, and the defense. I mean, they played well. Who's that? Tavares. I think when I first saw him, he looked a bit. He looked like he wanted to prove a lot, but I think he wants to do a lot, you know. And I think in this game he was very effective, going up and down the side. I think if he could work on his game a lot more, he would also be a very good player in the Arsenal squad. Lukonga as well, I thought he was also had a good game. Against Smith Rowe, I've spoken about him. You guys know how I feel about him. And there again, he's proven it. Yeah, he works. But what I'm seeing now, and everyone can see it, like even Aubameyang, first couple of games of the season, he was not like this. Even last year, he was not like this. But now you can see guys, Aubameyang is chasing every ball, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully hopefully that feeds in to everyone else in the team, you know? And I think besides, you can say, yeah, we passed right, passing right. But for me, this is all I've been wanting the whole, I mean, for like 2, 3, 4,
yeah.
I guess, quite a lot of long time. I just wanted to see Arsenal look like they want to win, you know? And that's what I liked about this weekend. It's carrying on.
Yeah, look, Arsenal, they're in a good run of form. I do think also Aston Villa are a weird side at the moment. They haven't quite figured out how to replace Grealish in terms of their style of play. And you see it, they have kind of on and off days. They haven't quite found the perfect formula of how to get the most out of Ollie Watkins in terms of creating enough chances for him to because there are days where it all comes together and they really play well, and then get days like this where I agree with you, they look a bit off the pace and then they don't seem to quite put up the kind of resistance you would expect. Arsenal took full advantage of that. Smith Rowe, I agree with you, he's just such a talent. He's such a good player at the moment. And I think Arsenal at the moment are blessed with some really talented youngsters. They've got a lot of good young players here. I think the key will be kind of holding it together and turning that form into kind of a consistent run over a long period. Also, just to remind you, Spurs also beat Aston Villa. So, you know, it's a good result, but it's not, you know.
Yeah, look. Yeah, like, I don't want to like say, yeah, hey, look, I mean, even
the level is quite low. You know what I mean?
Guys, we...
It's not like, I don't know.
No. I don't. I don't.
Like scoring five at Old Trafford, for example.
I don't disagree with you. But the fact is, you know, we got the win. I mean, even Arsenal, we beat Spurs. But I even said about the win, I was worried because Spurs themselves, no ways. I mean, if they could play like that against any team, Spurs, they would have also conceded 3 goals straight. You know.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, they would have conceded any team. You know, any team would have beaten Spurs playing like that. But I mean, look, positives. Arsenal, since the Man City loss, we haven't lost since then. And that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 8 games, you know. And we've conceded, I think, that's how many goals have we conceded since then? That is 5 goals conceded since that time. And against Man City, we conceded 5. That was 7 in the space of 2 games, you know.
No, you guys are doing better. You guys are doing better. But for all those who play fantasy football, Smith Rowe is a steal. £5.4 million I have in my team.
I have him.
Yes, if you guys want a steal, that's the guy you need to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about, I mean, you touched on Aubameyang, obviously, new lease of life. He's scoring goals now. Lacazette, we can see he's playing for a new contract, his next move. He's trying to get as much as he can. And it's funny because I don't know. Do you think he's playing for a contract to stay at Arsenal, or is it we know the writing's on the wall for him, so it's wherever he's moving next?
It yeah, look, be both.
Yeah, because he's if it, you know, like the people are arguing now. I remember before we were like, no, like I said, Aubameyang can't start in one field.
Yeah.
And now here against Aston Villa again, Aston Villa can't really find the feet. But like I said, looked like he had a place on that field. You know, he was doing his job. And the other guys were, I mean, working around that. It's not like there were like two people playing, trying to do one thing. So I don't know. It just depends what he wants. And at the moment, I won't lie to you. I don't know what he wants. Does he want to start more? I have not seen anything in that regard to that.
No, I think it shows that he does want to stay there. I think obviously Ketia was rumored to be leaving at the start of the season. That Palace move didn't happen for him. So I think Lacazette and Aubameyang will probably be the two guys going forward. And in terms of Martinelli doesn't really play through the middle as much, or doesn't hasn't gotten opportunities to play through the middle. And then you've got that other guy who started the season. What's his name again?
Pepe.
No, man. But man, another young guy.
Bulligan or something. What's his name?
Bulligan. So is obviously young, and he probably maybe might need a loan next season. Depending on what happens with Ketia. But I think if you have three strikers or three players who can play through the middle, Aubameyang, Lacazette, and another person, then you should be good to go. It was quite interesting, you know, the fact that in this game, Odegaard didn't start. But I think obviously you just need to also rotate and give other players a chance. Because obviously in the last game, you tried that 4-1-4-1 formation against Palace, where it did well in the first 30 minutes of the first half. And then Palace, you know, overpowered you, even though you disagree with me. But I think that Palace were overpowering you. But this game, I saw the goals. There were some nice goals from Arsenal. I think they knew that it was your birthday, and they had to give you 3 goals. You know.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think, but I mean, look, again, I think even with the. The Odegaard not starting for me. What I'd like to see as well, it's not. I don't think I'm going to see it anytime soon. But I think once we see an Arsenal where, like the back four, we know what our best back four are. We know Aubameyang up front is probably the best guy. But once we see a team that Arteta can play consistently and probably give us, like everyone knows that no, this team's probably going to get us a win. I think then you know we've passed the hurdle because. If you look at your teams, like we've said, there's the top guys, the Liverpool, like even Manchester United don't know their best. They've got good players, but they don't know their best 11, you know?
Yeah.
The Chelsea know
it. That's one way of putting it.
Chelsea know it, Liverpool know it, Man City know their best 11. I think Pep Guardiola is probably the one guy that rotates
a lot. Don't fall into Claudio's traps, man. Don't fall into Claudio's traps. I think
Jason says, well done, Wong. A great performance. Nice intensity from the players.
Yes,
and then
exactly.
Says, you'll probably be lethargic this weekend and lose. So don't get too...
No. Look, yeah, the one thing
Leicester, you're playing Leicester. You're playing Leicester this weekend, so you got to watch out, eh?
Yeah, but yeah, and also we're playing less games than everyone else as well. So that's why I doubt it would be that... The thought, I mean, we don't have Champions League. We're just playing in the FA Cup and the League, the League Cup, and then the Premier League. We've got only this weekend. Now we've got a double week. So yeah, maybe that's the thing. But Leicester as well. Come on, guys. Leicester concede. We know this. Arsenal scoring. Arsenal don't concede. I think Leicester will be the ones that also have to be a bit wary as well.
Okay, but now you're overlapping for Thursday's show. All in all, you're quite happy, Wonga. Is that what I'm getting? It was the perfect gift, 100%. Like Cyril said. You were smiling from ear to ear. But let's talk about the next game. We're going to look into the West Ham Spurs game. And I know we've got a couple of guys all waiting for the teaser, the nice, I wouldn't even say dessert. It's like a mixture between the main meal and the dessert. So we're just going to talk starter here for the time being. West Ham Spurs. Matt, tell me what happened here and how does this thing go wrong? Because when we're looking at it, We've got what? The Portuguese Nuno Espírito Santo is struggling. He's struggling to get these guys rolling. What's going on here?
Yeah. Look, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't even know what Tottenham are at the moment. It's like we honestly, like we, you know, I talk about us beating Villa that game. It was quite gritty. We had to like really work it out. It wasn't a great performance, but we managed to find the goals. Then other weeks where we just can't string together passes. We're just slow in the turnaround. There's no intensity. And this was a weird game because we started, if you look at the, I mean, even just look at the stats, Tottenham started with a lot of the chances, a lot of possession and stuff. But even then, it didn't look incisive, you know. There was one or two really nice moments. I thought Lucas had quite a good game in the first half. You know, his movement was really nice. There was a couple of slick chances, like a lot of good interplay between him and Son. Going forward, Kane didn't look too bad. His defensive work, obviously, there was a lot of question marks about where him standing still for the goal, you know, which obviously is unfortunate, I think. And then in the second half, I think I saw the stat, we didn't have a shot on target or possibly didn't have a shot at all, which wouldn't surprise me. I didn't get to see the whole second half. I was sort of on and off. So, but I didn't see a shot. And so it was just one of those frustrating ones. And we've had a few like this season where it's kind of, you can see we've got the players on the field that who should be able to do the job. And just for whatever reason, it's not clicking. They're not getting there. Oof, sheesh. Tough question, Jason. What needs to change? Is Nuno the right guy? Do you cash in on Kane and rebuild? Kane not looking great. I agree that Kane's not looking great.
No questions, eh?
Well, he's not looking great in the league. Do you cash in on him? I mean, the other side of that sword is is anyone still going to come in for 100 million
Newcastle.
For Kane at the moment?
Newcastle.
Yeah, and yeah. I suppose on the one hand, it would make sense. You know, Kane goes through these slumps, though, and then he usually comes out of it and bangs in 15. So it's kind of, you know, the question more for me is the system working? Because you can see what Nuno's setting him up to do. He's trying to make it very solid and then take advantage of the counterattacks. And the problem we're having at the moment is that we're not finding that gear. When we are getting the turnaround, the intensity is so poor. We're really sluggish. And it's really annoying. It's really frustrating because every time you see it happening, as a fan, you're just like, you know, not long ago, these exact players were doing this right. They were making the runs. And I think it's unfair on certain individuals because I think the likes of Son and in this game, Lucas are trying. You know, Son's intensity is always there. He's always looking to make something happen. We're perhaps over-dependent on him at the moment, just kind of unlocking every door. In terms of what needs to change, I don't know. It's a tough one because we're in a... I really like Nuno. I really like the way he talks about the club. I really like as an individual.
Is it because he's Portuguese you like him or just like
him? No. I mean, you know, he seems a really nice guy. I've watched a lot of interviews with him now and he just seems to be a really genuine, down-to-earth, really nice chap who has a really interesting view of football. And I just think which is nice for a Spurs fan because it was really easy not to like Mourinho because he was so abrasive and he was really kind of harsh on the players. And he's doing it again already at Roma. It's his style now. He used to have this 3-year cycle, and that cycle's getting smaller and smaller. I think his next job, which will probably be Newcastle, in sort of last 2.5 days, he'll walk in all smiles and walk out having murdered John Joe Shelby. But it's nice to have a manager that I think seems to be a genuinely decent person. But at the same time, the results aren't quite getting there, and the plan he has is not quite clicking. And maybe he's not the right man for the job, but Spurs isn't Newcastle, so who would we bring in to replace him? You know, all of the managers who would probably have an instant impact are not going to want to go to Spurs. So that's a challenge. So I think
and that's a fair point, man. That's a fair point because you could argue that Spurs was that sort of, I'm not going to say outside top side or top team, but on the outer bracket that could still attract a quality manager. And they did. They got Mourinho. It didn't work out. But now Newcastle's got the cash. It's just going to trump any of that. So Spurs might be looking at someone and Newcastle will be over their shoulder. You know what? Actually, that's not a bad alternative. Let's just double what they were offering.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of clubs who are in that position now. You know, Spurs, if Everton end up walking away from Benitez, they'll have the same situation on their hands. Arsenal, to an extent, if it doesn't work out with Arteta, you know, who would they attract to replace him? So I think all of us are in this situation where yeah, I remember when you were saying it wasn't so good. You know, I'm old enough to remember when you didn't like Arteta. All right,
yes, we're good now. We're good. We good.
They're best in there, Matt. You don't see them hanging out there in North London. They're busy here outside of Mark Todd Lane.
No, we're okay now.
But yeah, so I think that the challenge there, you know, it was so hard for Spurs to recruit a manager in the first place. I think we, you know, it was a running joke who was going to replace Mourinho. If we got rid of Nuno now, we'd get Ryan Mason back in. I think it would give us an initial bounce, but it isn't a solution for the entire season.
Things are bad.
Yeah. Look, I think...
Does it not all stem down to the fact that... it was? And I've said this before, but it's the Kane... It's the hanging on to Kane. Because they beat City. They were on a high. It was the dream start for a new manager without their star player.
Okay.
The guy comes back in, and all of a sudden, the wheels come off the wagon.
Yeah.
It does sometimes feel like that, because there's moments where he seriously looks not bothered, you know, like he just his movement's a bit off. Then there are flashes of it, the stuff, you know, when him and Son do have a bit of interplay and they do create chances for one another, where it sort of looks really exciting again. You think, wow, they could actually do some fun stuff here. But I think those whether or not it was worth holding on to him is, I think we're only really going to be able to answer that question at the end of the season, because we're going to have to see what Kane actually does when he does get his head out the funk. At the moment, I wouldn't want to be in Nuno's shoes. I think it's a very difficult situation he's in to try and turn the side around in terms of getting the intensity up. And if some of that is down to the system he's choosing to play, then, you know, that's a discussion they need to have behind the scenes, that you know, we've got Paratici in now, supposed to be the director of football. Hopefully they're having these discussions at a high level in terms of strategically, what do we need to do to get the team firing? Because individual players aren't necessarily playing terribly. There's some good performances from, and you know, I talk about Son a lot because he's my new hero, but you know, Højbjerg is also not having a terrible season. Oliver Skip has had some really good performances. Tanganga was having a really good season, then he sort of fell off the rails a bit with a couple of bad performances, hasn't quite found his way back. But even the likes of Eric Dier and Sanchez have been playing some good football. And you know, guys, you remember me talking about them not having enough, but they've also had some good performances. Romero's come in and he's kind of hit the ground running. Emerson Royale had a shaky start, but he's also starting to look the business. So I think we should be performing better than we are, and it just seems to be not adding up to what it should. And how that gets fixed, I don't know. All I can say is it's a very frustrating watch as a Spurs fan at the moment.
It seems like it's going to be an up and down season for Spurs. You know what I mean? I think last weekend, we had a great performance against Newcastle. Slow start, obviously, with continuing the goal. But once they got that equalizer, they just looked like they were going to score like four goals. You know what I mean? And that first half was quite clinical in the way they came back, and then they had what, three goals in the first half, which Kane got back on the score sheet, which just looked great. Everything just Lucas hit the post, the header, you know what I mean? So he was just playing well. And then now I thought the momentum was gonna carry on into this game, but then now obviously it's dipped again, you know, which is unfortunate.
And there's maybe something to be said for that, because Spurs basically changed the whole side to go to Europe. And I know it's the Conference League or whatever, but there's a lot of talk about momentum. So they switched up the whole side. They went away and they lost. We lost one nil to Vitesse. And yeah, to Vitesse on and whatever they're called. So the players who played on the weekend, most of them didn't play midweek, and then it changed again. But I wonder if we don't need to start thinking about the momentum thing and kind of saying, well, look, it's not a competition we necessarily wanted to be in, but we're there, and we're going to keep derailing ourselves if we send out the B team, have a bad result, and then jiggle, you know, shuffle the deck again for the weekend. I think maybe they just need to kind of commit to letting Kane play as much football as possible till he shoots himself back into some form. You know, letting Skip and Højbjerg just partner one another in midfield in as many games as possible until they're also just defending and, you know, creating that kind of synergy that has been working really well. Because I think, you know, we were on a bit of a high after the Newcastle game. Not that it was, again, a vintage performance. I mentioned it last week. We got kind of lucky towards the end. There were still those Spurs mistakes that creep in. But it was kind of an uplifting result, you know, because we came from behind. We looked really sharp in attack. And I think maybe we should, to carry that on, maybe we should have played a few more of the first teamers in midweek. And maybe that would have, who knows, it might not have made a difference on the weekend. But we can't go from having a relatively good result against Newcastle to being so kind of impotent at West Ham. It was very frustrating. And like I said, I just don't know what Spurs are, other than heartbreaking.
But let's go back. I mean, you got the result against Newcastle. You did play West Ham, and West Ham currently sitting fourth. And I think Pums is touching on the fact that they are a hard side to beat. They did come off the back of a good season last year. You spoke about momentum, and I was carried over now. David Moyes.
The thing is, Claudio, is that the West Ham in Europa League are playing with 75% of the guys who played on the weekend. So that momentum that, that he's talking about, they have it. Because they play weekend, Sunday, Thursday, same similar players. Okay, now they've qualified actually because they won three games in a row. Now they've qualified for the next round of Europa. And it's the momentum he's talking about. And I think it definitely plays a part.
You know, I'm looking, Claudia, like even with that, I'm looking here at these teams. Only Liverpool. I'm looking at Liverpool and West Ham. It's the only teams I see here in that. So, like, let's say top four bracket. That's obviously, so I know I see Chelsea, Man City, Brighton, they go draws, Tottenham, also Man United. As soon as they've lost one, the next game is either a draw or a loss. And then they come back if they... but that first loss, it's sort of, you know, start something. So Matt, I think, does have something there. Yeah. Man City played against, just the thing, like Man City, you know how well they're playing. Two good teams, though. They play against Paris Saint-Germain, they lose. Then they come to Liverpool and then they end up drawing 2-2. But yeah, I'm not saying anything, but I'm just looking here and...
All I was trying to say, guys, I was like, maybe we're overlooking... We know Spurs is having a bump. They're having a bumpy ride at the moment. And it's understandable. The hangover from a lot of the players. A lot needs to happen there. A lot of investment obviously spent on the stadium. So it is. It's unfortunately, whether the Spurs fans like it or Matt, do you like it or not, it's going to be a work in progress. What I'm saying is where West Ham currently are now, and we've seen a sort of David Moyes that arguably Seller would have liked to have seen at Old Trafford, one who's owning the seats, owning the position. And it's almost like the club is molded to him like a velvet glove in a sense, where he's got his chosen players. You speak about the momentum carrying over because he played the same team, but that's the mentality he always had at Everton year after year. He knows how to do his thing and he knows how to do it well. So what should we be expecting from West Ham from that perspective? That's kind of the angle that I'm getting at you. Do we think they're going to have the legs to keep this going and actually be in contention for a European spot, and on a European spot, definitely, but maybe a Champions League spot is what I'm getting at.
Mm. I think like last season, the challenge they'll have is squad depth. They fell quite late on in the season due to tired legs, not having enough rotation. I think they'll have the same challenge here, although the players who they depend on have got that much more experience. You know, they held on to Declan Rice, who is still a huge part of their future, I think. And, The other thing is, I think the top four race this season is more competitive than it was last season. You know, bear in mind, even for all the talk about United in crisis, I think we've forgotten that this time last year, they'd only just come off the 6-1 defeat by Spurs. They were looking much worse this time last season than they do now. That top four race at the moment is still, I think, going to be a lot tighter.
I disagree with you. We're going to talk about that. I disagree with you largely. Because there's been more investment for United. The manager's been there longer, and he should not be getting
in terms of I don't mean in terms of how you look, like on a philosophical and emotional level. I mean, I'm sure terrible.
Emotional level.
I mean,
is
in terms
obvious.
Of. I'm talking. I mean, I'm talking the league position. You guys were sitting, weren't you sitting much lower down this time last year than you are now?
Liverpool? I think they were.
No, United.
You're referring to us.
So I think there's. The position of, on the log, right? That's and the points you have, right? But then there's also the part where how much money have you put into a squad, and then also the goals, the amount of goals you've conceded. Yes, we lost 6-1 and we lost 5-0, but already don't forget we also lost 4-2 to Leicester. You know what I mean? Cool. By this time last season, we had lost. Yes, we lost to Palace at home, but I think we lost to Palace like 1-0 or 2-1. You know what I mean? Then, you know, then we got a penalty the last minute against Brighton, you know, and then we started that away run. But I think the amount of goals conceded, yes, I think what you're probably alluding to is that Man United, even with the poor start, can still be in a top four race.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I think the top four race this season is going to be very competitive. I mean, statistically, Spurs are still in it now. And I don't honestly, if I had to bet money on it, I wouldn't bet money on Spurs being top four at the end of the season. I think there's a very competitive top four race, and to the West Ham's prospects, I think that will make it tougher for them this season. Never mind, you know, if Newcastle drop a billion, you never know. Maybe they could knock on the door of the top four.
Yeah, look, Jason's saying top three is already done. Only fourth is up for grabs. Does anyone agree with that?
Yeah. Ooh. You can't say, but when you look at it, you think. I mean, at the way things are going,
I think
now,
it depends.
But, I mean,
how
last season,
Wonga, just be honest, bro. Just say yes, bro.
What? Hey, last season, we said Man City, Pep Guardiola's job was up for grabs. Next thing you know, he's kissing the trophy. Ah, come on. I'm just saying, the way it looks now, I would agree with Jason and say, yeah, the way it looks now, I would agree with Jason and say, yeah, this is possible. But the Premier League and...
Well, there's questions to be answered. So Chelsea have got to navigate this period without their strikers. If they get through that, yeah. Liverpool have to navigate January, although there's question marks about the AFCON now, but if it goes ahead...
It's going to happen. I read an article earlier.
So it's definitely happening.
Yeah, that Cameroon is ready, guys. 9 January, AFCON starts. 6 February, it ends. I'm telling you, one of those guys will be in the semi-final, so he must know that he might not have the Egyptian man.
Salah and Mane play each other in the final.
Keita's also going, don't forget as well. Keita's been...
You see, running away. Yeah. He's running away from these problems.
I don't want to know about January.
Can't hide.
Guys,
but,
Carry on, Matt.
Yeah, so I think it's always, you know, last year we kind of proved ourselves silly trying to guess the end of the season too early, and I think this time round I think that it's certainly in the top three's hands. You know, City, Chelsea, Liverpool will all feel like it's theirs to throw away, as it were. But at the same time, there's big questions to be answered for each of them. But if they come through those, then I think, it would be very difficult to see any of the current chasing pack realistically catching up to that top three.
Yeah.
Well, no, talking about the top three and in particular the game.
Wait, Claudio, are you shooting the show from a kitchen?
No, it's actually a study. Why?
It looks like a kitchen.
Oh, like a kitchen.
No, you guys want to take the tour? There's actually a lot happening in here. There's a bed and a mattress in the corner. Definitely not a kitchen, but if we are going to be in the kitchen, let's talk about the kitchen where the stove is hot for a certain United. I think let's talk about that, Celo. I mean, we've got Man United 5-0, and also Matt spoke about the 3-1 previous.
Oh, we lost the Spurs. Flip, wow.
That's what
we had such a bad weekend. It's not as bad as I thought.
It's carrying over, isn't it?
It's okay.
It's carrying over from the last season.
So, Claudio, it's okay. If you want to be a Spurs fan, it's cool, bro.
Like, you know what? All I can say is it's a good way to test if everyone is awake. And I was waiting for a comment to come up, but you guys picked it up before the comments did. So, good job. Good job. Enjoyed that one.
You had only one thing to do. One thing.
I actually had a lot of things to do, Sid. A lot of things. You only had one thing to do.
Your team won 5-0, and you couldn't put their name on the right on the score sheet. Unbelievable. You don't deserve the 5-0.
Don't deflect from the
unless what Claudio's done, because you guys have got Spurs next, haven't you?
Hey?
Yeah, we have
United
Spurs
next. So maybe this is a premonitionary type of thing, you know? Two in a row. And I got to say, if you lose 5-0 to Spurs, that's got to be a sackable offense.
Finally, someone actually picked up on it. Good job, Matt. Good job. You picked up on that. Nice one.
He's lying. He had no foresight. He's biding all over the place. It's like, man. Man United just lost 5-0 this weekend. I don't even know who they lost to.
Oh, please. I love how the man went whiskey tasting because he wasn't brave enough to see the results and the game unfolded, and that's exactly what it was.
Like I said on Twitter,
you were testing whiskey, trying to see what was stronger than your partnership, your centre back pairing.
Listen. I have a life outside of football.
Convenient game to be skipping, plans, is all I'm saying.
And plans happen for this weekend, for Sunday. I was with another Man United fan. He's actually a part of the Man United supporters club, and we were actually watching the game on one of the guys' phones. So I only saw goal number four. I don't know which one. I saw two goals only, and I saw the red card. That's the only things I saw. So that's one thing I can talk about. But I can talk about the coach.
But
no, but let's talk about the game because I think the game's important. Yeah. Go ahead, Wonga.
No, I was just going to say, Silo, I mean, I don't think he had much to watch. Maybe that's the only time Man United were on the field. I mean, the rest of the game, they were absent. Yo, I think people are saying, I know people are talking about Liverpool's performance. Yes, I think what they did well was they were clinical in the finishing. But, yo, Man United, I don't know if it's similar to what a Tottenham were against Arsenal, but, yo, they were all over the place, you know. And they looked worried. Goodness me. There was fear in them. They're playing at Old Trafford. It was very different to that second half they had at Atlanta. The second half at Atlanta, they were fired up. I think they installed fear in the opponents. But when they played against Liverpool, when their first goal went in, I think it went in quickly. I think the players even saw it. I think Maguire. And I mean, now if your defenders are... or worried about that. I mean, you could see it. As soon as that first goal went in, everyone's worried. Halftime 4-0. It was game
and
over.
And also, let's not look over the fact that, you know, a couple of the Liverpool players were missing. All the so-called starters were missing. I mean, Fabinho was in the centre mid, and that immediately should be giving any United player that side going, you know what, the key man in the centre mid is not playing there. Mane was on the bench too. Matip, they rested Matip, or he was... Oh, sorry, he picked up a knock. He wasn't available. So, Kunate... made his debut, Premier League debut, starting for Liverpool at Old Trafford, and that was the result. So there are a couple of those things when you're looking. If, as a manager, I'm going to go and be like, look, this clearly isn't the first Liverpool 11 year. Let's have a go at them. And I think what was really distressing as a United fan is, I mean, Jason talks about the pressing was the joke. They were all over the place. And, you know, when you look at this, I mean, you've touched on the fact Maguire looked terrified from the onset. You had Lindelof and Maguire running into each other. And again, this epitomizes everything Celo's been saying to date in terms of United looking disjointed. They've got players that were all about, you know, the big moments. They've got big players going forward. They're not too bad because they got a player. They've got Ronaldo who can do something within a second. Maybe Fernandes can do it. But between the midfield, between the defense, between everything else, it's completely disjointed. They literally separate sections.
It's not a team.
And when you look at the pressing, I mean, Jason, brilliant point to bring that out because the first goal is completely pressing. Apparently, Ole was saying before the game, no, they want to press. But now you've got very emotional. We've spoken about the emotional side. Ole playing Rashford, who hasn't been starting. You're playing Greenwood. When you've got players you spent big money for, but now going, cool, we're going to press. And you can see these guys haven't been taught how to press. They don't know. I mean, basics. This is stuff that Nick can come onto the show and teach guys how to press, showing which way to force the keeper to kick the ball. That's not happening. You've got Wan-Bissaka. That first goal is completely – it's created because one player commits the wrong way. Wan-Bissaka then overcommits. And then it just gets played in. It's just easy, 1-2 football from there. And for me, is the most shocking thing from all of this. And then the worst part is that it's 3 years into his tenure, Ole, and nothing's changed. You've also got now the players within the squad that are turning on him, which is also right. Look, I'm happy about all of this. It sounds like I'm painting the picture where I'm defending United. At the end of the day, it is a 5-0 thrashing that Liverpool have done, which also, and this is the funny thing, is Liverpool got to come out second half and rest. They rested. That looked like a warm-up game after that.
Yeah, the game was done,
was even more distressing.
But it's true. Yeah, why? Why?
The myth is killing Man United. The myth of saying we have a United way of playing. Let's back Ole. That is killing the club. That is killing the players. And the players are also speaking up now. They're not happy about it. There's a divide within the squad. And that's what I've been reading. And you, Celo, you can touch on the fact with regards to Ferguson wanting to defend Ole and give him another shot.
You know, I watch a couple of fan channels, two main fan channels, and I think the overarching theme that you realize in Man United is that because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a cult figure in terms of that 99 goal that he scored in the Champions League final, he has gained favor and he's gained some sympathy from fans. You know what I mean? But you need to separate the footballer, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, smiling assassin, best super sub ever in the history of the Premier League, and the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Those are two different people. And he gets fired. He's still a cult hero in terms of a footballer. That his managerial career will not take away from what he did as a player. But he is not the person to take Man United forward. And I think the writing has been on the wall. You know, Paul Scholes said after the Atalanta game that Man United were too open in that first half in the Atalanta game. You know what I mean? Atalanta had some good chances. Yes, Man United also had some good chances, but Atalanta scored two goals in that first half. And then Leicester scored four goals at the weekend. So what were you expecting when, if you've conceded four goals, two goals, going to a game against one of the best attacking teams in England, you're not prepared. You're not prepared. Yeah. Rather be difficult to break down and then maybe try go for it. You know what I mean? Now you're playing this weird, also he's come up with this weird formation that he's come up with. It's called the 4-2-4 formation. It won't work. It doesn't work. And I think, yes, Claudio's probably alluded to this fact probably earlier in the season where he probably spoke about the Ronaldo and the Bruno instance, right? Ronaldo and Bruno don't work well in terms of pressing, you know, because Ronaldo doesn't press. Then Bruno presses erratically. So Bruno presses erratically and then Ronaldo doesn't press. So the problem is then if Bruno is probably pressing probably correct. No. Bruno's probably pressing correctly. But the fact that Ronaldo didn't press with him, then now it looks like Bruno is stupid for pressing.
Go ahead, Matt.
It's either too good or it's going to be very poor, because pressing, you need to press as a team, and Ronaldo doesn't press at all. You know, we all know Ronaldo's not a presser.
So I think we need to sort of coin the term here. There's a difference between a press and a shove. And what Bruno ends up doing is a shove. It's sort of, you know, it's not tactical. It's not clinical. A press is a very precise kind of, I'm going to press this. Shove is just, I'm barging in, I'm having a go, you know. And I think that's how we can do it. That formation one was always a weird one. It looked like, you know, when you guys play Football Manager and you're like, oh, let me have a go. I'll just throw on a 4-2-4. Like, I'll try.
That's exactly what it is.
There should be someone.
One of these fan TV guys out there would literally do a better job with the squad because they're more tactically adept than what this is just by playing manager. That's the difference. Yeah, this guy's so emotional. He's obviously taken everything. He's forgotten being a player for United, for Ferguson. Ferguson went, oh, come on, lad. You know, run in the last few minutes. You're going to get something. And he's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, that's kind of what's happened. But also, here's the thing. Mourinho, there was all that shit they gave Mourinho, right? And you know what? At the time, Mourinho was facing a Klopp. Liverpool were on the surgeons. And it frustrated the living hell out of me every single time Liverpool would play United. And I knew Liverpool were better. We all knew Liverpool were the better side, but we weren't getting results. Why? Because the Oak knew how to set up the team. He didn't have to have the best players. He knew how to deny them space and give Liverpool, make them think of doing something else. And they couldn't do it. And what did he do? He walked away with the results. Now you've got to manage an Ole going, you know what, after, by the way, getting criticized the whole week by all the pundits, all the former players, his own Paul Scholes, Carragher, all those guys saying, listen, buddy, you can't be doing this. And he did it, and he got shown flames, and yet he's going to get given another opportunity. And I'm happy. Yeah. I'm all for it.
Ole, what I have always been saying about Man United is that, you know, I think the biggest problem with Man United is that from the top to the bottom, we're not run in a way that a football club is supposed to be run. You know, a football club, you know, I look at a model like an Ajax, or look like at a model like a Dortmund, you know what I mean? Or even look like at a model like a Man City, you know, where you actually have football people. Man City, when they got money and so on and so forth, they didn't have the right people in the right places. And then they got Barcelona's execs that were busy with Barca when Barca was doing well, and they came to City with Pep, and they could actually run a proper football club, and they identified, you need to get this player, you need to get that player. Their development is looking better now. You know, it's a football club. It's run well. It's all about results. It's not about the money. Man United is great at making money, great at making social media interactions. We don't fucking care about social media interactions. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck if you've got 100,000 followers on TikTok or 100,000 impressions on TikTok. Claudio worries about that stuff in his day job because he's trying to make money. Man United, you shouldn't be worrying about impressions on TikTok. What you should be worrying about as Man United, you should be asking yourself, how is Man United performing on the field? Is Man United challenging for the league title? Is Man United challenging for the Champions League? Those are the two questions you need to ask yourself as a director of Man United. You need to ask yourself those questions. And bloody hell, Joel Glazer's busy in Dubai trying to buy an IPL cricket team. What the fuck? Your biggest asset is fucking burning. You know what I mean? You know, so I think Man United, right now, obviously, I would have thought that by the time I'm on this show, I would have been at least looking forward to a different manager who's got pedigree. You know what I mean? Sometimes also some Man United fans say, no, Conte, if he comes in, he's a short-term solution. He'll probably be not the right person to take the team forward. Yes, he'll be a short-term solution, but at least he's a proven winner. That guy has won with Chelsea. He's won Inter Milan, Juventus. Yes, he's not been great in the Champions League, but he's won league titles with every single club that he's coached at. And I think let's just take the short-term wins that we might get with such a manager, and we'll probably lose out on the long-term wins because that's what sometimes you lose out on. But I'd rather have a manager that at least knows what he's trying to do, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does not know what he's trying to do, and he keeps picking his favorites.
Yeah,
favorites.
There's no.
You can't pick my friend. Guys, have you ever seen Harry Maguire bench? Have you ever seen Bruno Fernandes bench? Have you ever seen McFred bench?
You guys played Maguire when he was clearly not fit.
Injured. But,
you'll wheel him out in a wheelchair, you know?
Even what Scholes, you know what Scholes, the funny thing about Scholes said about the Atlanta game, even he said, like he said, okay, yeah, that the if they had played that against if you have to do it against Liverpool, they were going to get punished. Because Liverpool, Man City said they were going to get punished. He said first off, they would get punished. And he also said that McFred and McTominay, he's like, even if he was playing in a system like that, he said, he doesn't think you'd be able to even cope with something like that. So now you're putting McFred and you're putting McTominay there. And you've heard now people are actually, now they're saying, look, people are even asking now, is Fred bad or... Is he just not too sure what he must be doing on the field, you know? And I think that's
Stella, you've spoken about that before. Fred is such a better player for Brazil. You see him in the correct system and he looks like a world beater.
Yes.
See him in United, he looks like a Sunday Liga.
Because he plays with Casemiro or Fabinho in the midfield for Brazil. He's not the one who does the six. He's the one who does... So Fred is similar to a Kante, right? He's a guy, so Kante does not play as the guy who's right in front of the defense. Kante tries to break up play higher up so he can get the ball, pass it to the more creative guys, and then he can touch the ball. That's what Fred is good at. Fred is good at pressing, tackling, being tenacious, higher up the field, get the ball, pass it to players who can pass the ball better, and then you know what I mean? But now you're trying to play him at the back, at the guy to get the ball from the defenders. That's not his qualities. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't see this.
That's a problem. If I can see it,
why can't you see it? And other fans can see it.
To be fair, look, I don't think... I'm going to go back to the emotional part of what Ole is. There's a huge part of him where he is a bit of a fan. He's a romantic when it comes to football. And I think he's getting caught up in all of it. Whether or not he's a good coach or whatever, I don't think... You've got to remember where he's come in now. You've got Van Gaal, who historically, I mean, he's one of the legends of recent football, right, as a manager. Tactically astute, knows what he's doing in training sessions. This is what the players were used to on a training day to day. Then Mourinho comes in, another student of the game, arguably revolutionized football at the time that he came in and his success came in. Also, methods and techniques, obviously he was hard, but there was that offness, that sour taste where the players were able to have conversations with the board and that's crept in and all of that.
Yeah.
Now you've got Ole. You always say it, week in, week out, vibes United. You got that guy. Tactically, he's nowhere near on par of any of these other guys. So now the players also comparing him to that. And apparently there was something that was said that leaked out where, on the goals that he conceded against Leicester. He asked him in the dressing room and he said, why are we conceding so many goals?
And
a lot of them are going... And they turn the question, they say, well, you know, because of you, buddy. That's why we're conceding these goals. So there's an expectation where he's going, these are professional footballers. I don't need to coach them. I just need to man manage them. And, you know, at the end of the day, it takes a strong... And also, let's not forget the fact where the point that I'm trying to throw in here, the romanticism part, where he's getting caught up in everything else that he's hearing as well. The things that the fans are saying, the things that pundits are saying. He shouldn't be doing that. He shouldn't give two shits about that. If he was strong in character and had conviction as to what he was doing, he wouldn't even be bothered doing that. And now he's losing the dressing room. And once we know you've lost the dressing room, where are you going from there?
Yeah, I think that I wonder something Selo said made me kind of think as well when you were talking about the short term wins and stuff. And I wonder if the challenge at United at the moment is that, you know, what Ferguson did was so special, you know, and so kind of iconic, and it became so synonymous with the Premier League as a whole, but United as a club as well. And I wonder if they're so keen to try and rebuild that long term project that they are overlooking short term foibles. Because every United fan you talk to will say, oh, but remember, Ferguson was three games from the sack. You know?
Yeah.
But that was in 1986. That was a different time.
And Ferguson had done something that another manager never did. He won the Scottish League and broke up the Old Firm. You know, he won.
He came with pedigree.
He won two Scottish titles and won the European Cup Winners' Cup, the European League of then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least he had.
Yeah, exactly. So he was a proven winner already. So there, it's not the same comparison, but people are doing it anyway. People are making that comparison in the hope of this kind of. It'll work out all right. And in 20 years from now, we'll all go, oh, isn't it great that we held on to Ole? And I just think that, like you said, there's maybe a short-term solution where you can bring in a manager who's going to maybe shake up the squad, have two good seasons, get some silverware in, remind the squad this is how you win stuff. Yeah. And then if you end up moving on to another journeyman after that, maybe that's okay. Maybe it's more important that the club as a whole progresses rather than necessarily hoping for a single person to kind of do it. And I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, and that's a very valid point, Matt. But we're looking at it. Look at Brendan Rodgers. He got given the opportunity. Great coach. Obviously learned from the other guys. Came to Liverpool. It was wrong time for him. But at least you could see from a coaching perspective, they were doing things. There were things that were happening. We didn't get all the results. And you know what?
And they didn't fall that short, in fairness to Rodgers.
Some sentiment slipped.
Point is, he learned his trade and he did.
You know that guy's name,
and he's better. Now you talk about the experience in and around the club, and you spoke
Do you know the guy's name who slipped?
But you spoke about it, Selo. I'm gonna go. You know what? Actually, why am I just not laughing at you? I'm trying to like have a proper conversation with you, and you're talking shit. So actually, you know what? you want to laugh at United there for getting absolutely hammered and being the same amount of points as you?
You guys can laugh all you want.
I'm not laughing.
Because it's actually a joke. You've got Darren Fletcher, technical director. You've got Carrick, assistant coach. How many qualified people are there out there in the world that can do these jobs, and yet you want to keep it all in house and keep the ethos, the
mix? That's the biggest problem with Man United, as I said right now, is that they don't want a manager who's going to challenge them. That's why there's reservations in the board about Conte, because they know he's going to ruffle some feathers in the setup type of thing, and they're not ready for that, you know, because they. You know, they had a Mourinho before and they felt that Mourinho was challenging them and so on. And now they've got Solskjaer, who's a yes man, who's so happy to have this job, who will not say anything bad about the owners, where, you know, even in the Super League, he never even said anything bad. He said, no, these guys are actually good people, which is fucking rubbish. You know what I mean? And so he doesn't speak up against them, and they don't want someone to challenge them. And that's why apparently some people on the board have reservations about a content. And Sir Alex Ferguson must stay out of it when they ask him for his opinion. He must just say...
He was on the training ground today.
I know. He went to protect him, which I don't understand. You know what I mean? I think he should have seen that the writing was on the wall.
You know when you got in a fight with kids at school, and the next day, the kid that you were in the fight with rocks up with their parent and needs to like talk to the teachers and say, hey, this kid...
Same situation.
...is doing that for Ole right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I saw as well. I mean, firstly, where Man United on the log is not laughable. I think there's a lot you can do from that position.
Yes, because I'm ahead of you, yes.
I wish they put three more and then it was going to be a different story. But
Akhil.
I think that's a bit harsh on Arteta, to be fair.
No. Look, guys, the season will continue. And as the season continues, I'll have more to say. But I mean, look, that's the with Ole, as bad as it is, I won't lie to you, I did kind of like, you know, people say, no, you can't feel sorry for him. I'm like, yeah, look, I do feel a bit sorry for him. It's a lot on the guy. at the moment. And it's part of the Man United job. That's true. It would be a nice story for the guy. Like, you can even see, like, when Paul Scholes speaks about it, he pulls out all the holes he sees and he's pretty much accurate with it. But every time they always go to, you know, do you think he can come back and obviously come back from what he's done? I mean, from what's happening now. And they all say yes. And I also feel, yes, he can come back from what he's done. But the question is, how long will that take? Because as you guys say, he doesn't have the pedigree. That's just the reality of it. It's nothing personal. But the question is, how long
he's been in the job as long as Arteta has. And these last couple of weeks have been the first time I've seen you smiling about Arteta. It's been a long time of trust the process. And Ole has had similar. It's also about 3 years now, right? They kind of started the job around about the same time.
And no, you can look at Arteta after.
Both of them. But both of them have. You could argue that neither of them have really progressed the club from where they were. They've kind of helped
the team.
Yeah, but the one's got a Ballon d'Or winner in it. And the one's spent 73 million.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, though. Like, you look at the teams in terms of their achievement have stayed where they were. And whereas Arsenal have done that,
Arsenal have won the FA Cup. Yeah, won the FA Cup.
That's true. And also what Arsenal have done, and you could argue United have done it to a lesser extent, is kind of progress their youth structure. Look at Saka and Smith Rowe coming through. And at United, Rashford to an extent, but even his development has maybe not been what it could have been if he'd had a different manager. Greenwood is a really exciting talent, but you've got to ask the question, is he going to hit his full potential if Ole is his manager for the next 3 years? Yeah, his natural finishing is there. You can't deny it. But he's not doing anything else. And I think
doesn't pass in that regard.
So the comparison I'm making is I'm saying if you look at Arteta and Ole, and a lot of people have been saying Arteta out for a long time. It's been going on. He's not fit for the job. He's not right. Da, 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 da. He's just a good haircut, whatever, you know. And but Ole does get that easy run with the certain pundits. I think that is changing. I think people are starting to kind of realize there's only so long they can defend this. The kind of emotional reasons for keeping Arteta at Arsenal, which have been so criticised and everything, we're now looking at United, and it's like it's the exact same thing actually, but with Ronaldo on the pitch, which I think is kind of probably the most damning thing. Kind of, you know, that you can't turn that squad into being something that's a little bit formidable is probably not a good thing.
A fellow Spurs fan is saying that Nuno deserves to be sacked if he loses to United and keep Ole in the job. He can't take the torture anymore. Can you take the torture, man?
Like I said, I don't know what Tottenham are at the moment, so I just don't know which version of Spurs is going to pitch up. I could see us doing another 5-0 against you guys. See us losing 5-0. So I just don't know. I agree with you. I think if
Yep.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, if we lose to United and we end up second, you know, I wouldn't be overly surprised. I just worry about what we'd get in because Conte's not going to come to Spurs. So it's not like we'd have that option. You know, we'd end up with Eddie Howe or something. So I don't know.
Yeah. And I just want to comment on what Uncle Drew was saying here. He said, you know, Ole spent over 400 million to the point after 3 years, there's still no discernible style of place. What is increasingly clear is how poorly coached the team is. And I think that for me by halftime was it. I was like, this guy's done. There's just nothing to keep him going still. And then even despite the face that Fergie was pulling on the day, has still gone to bat for him. So let's see what happens from that perspective. But gents, I just want to talk to you.
We need to remove the romanticism of Ole and stuff, you know, and look at it and critically and ask yourself the question: is Man United a better team to what they were last season? Yes, other teams had issues, you know, Chelsea had their issues, Liverpool had their injuries, and Man City were probably hitting their straps, but still. You still got the points against the other teams around you, and other teams were doing well. You know, Leicester were doing well, West Ham were doing well, but you still got the points around those teams, and you still finished second. But you've regressed. If you've regressed from last season, and you've brought in three world-class talents, that even one that you don't even use, who's actually a better winger than the other person who doesn't even possible, then you have to ask yourself the question. what is the measure doing? You're supposed to progress, you know, but you're going you know, going backwards, and nothing seems to change. And yeah, the management and the support staff, the coaching staff is also not good enough.
Yeah, and just on that note, from the last thing from a United perspective, Akil saying Arteta is the better coach than Ole, is a better coach than Ole, but the difference in quality of the squad has kept Ole's weaknesses hidden. Yeah, I think that I think we can't disagree with that. I think it's
better. Vibes FC, man.
Vibes FC, gents. From a Liverpool side, I mean, Salah's come in, yet to agree a contract. He obviously has the interview unscheduled by his agent, or scheduled by his agent, not really made aware by the club, saying he's happy to stay at the club. And it's not in his hands. Very convenient. He then becomes the first player to score a hat-trick at Old Trafford. And now suddenly the asking price in his contract's gone from £400,000 a week to £500,000 a week.
What?
And obviously scores the most goals as an African player. Breaks another record, 10 consecutive goals for Liverpool. He's on fire right now. And I think if we're going to look back at it, by this time, people are probably going to say he's the greatest ever African player to play in the Premier League at some stage when he's finished. But what I want to ask you guys is, from a Liverpool perspective, I know Wonga said throwing the money, but what does it do to a club like Liverpool and possibly to a squad if they give this player the sort of asking price and give him the cash that he wants?
I don't know. You see, the money thing is such a made-up nonsense in football, because it's always, you know, every year we hit a new high watermark in terms of what's a crazy figure, you know, like 100 million is a ridiculous figure for players, but it's been spent more than once now. And I think there's question marks around, is he worth that much money? Which, again, as we've discussed before, if you've got the money and he's doing the job, and you know, then pay it to him. Liverpool's challenge is they're not actually as wealthy as sides like Chelsea and United. And the problem they've got is they probably can't put that wage structure together, because if they put him on 500, then it's only a matter of time before Mane and a few other players will be like, hey, if he's on 500, I'm worth at least 480, kind of a thing. And then before you know it, you're in trouble. So, and we've seen squads do that before. Historically, it happened to Leeds. It happened on a smaller scale size like Portsmouth, where they bring in too many players on too much money, can't keep it up, and then it all collapses. So Liverpool have to understand what their wage structure is, and they have to have a grown-up discussion with him and say, look, the offer is what it is. And if he wants to go to Newcastle and get that money, he's going to have to do it. But I think it's kind of the question isn't so much, is he worth that money? It's for me, it's more, does Liverpool have that money to spend on playing staff? And if they do, why wouldn't they give it to him? And if they don't, then it's not even a question. But it has to be a squad level question, because you can't have a situation where a single player earns so much more than everyone else because of the disunity it sows. You'll end up losing your other top three players, and it becomes this whole knock on effect. And I think that the question as to whether Salah deserves it, on the one hand, is completely moot, because at the moment, I mean, if he wants a million a week, you should give it to him. The guy's phenomenal. There's nothing he can't do. Whether or not he'll still play that way post signing the contract is maybe something Liverpool should consider. And you know, if that's what's motivating, maybe promise him 500k, but tell him it's only coming at the end of the season, and then at the end of the season be like, oh well, I don't know, it didn't work. And then you know,
yeah.
I told you, man. I was like, listen, right? It 400,000 makes sense, but 500,000 doesn't make sense to me. You know, we saw it at a club like Man United, where Sanchez came in and a Martial and a Rashford said, hey, but I play better than this guy and he earns more than double what I earn. Please give me half of what he earns. And that's what happened. You know, Martial and Rashford got half the salary that the guy was getting. But if you think about it, he was earning like £500,000 a week. You know what I mean? That's ridiculous, where the next highest person was at £300,000. So now you've got this huge-ass gap between your highest earner and then guys who are actually playing better than that guy. Cool, maybe in this situation, obviously, it's different, because actually Salah has proven himself in the club, whereas Sanchez was from outside the club. So I say, a £400,000, get on the phone to LeBron James and say, hey, LeBron, can we just use some of your money there at Fenway to just pay this guy, and let's just pay him the money. You know, I think he's also a Nike athlete. Pay him the money. He has a Nike club. Go call Oregon Nike and say, guys, we just need to pay Salah this much. Can't you maybe just up his Nike sponsorship money? You know, just to keep him at a Nike club or something. Just find a way, guys, because I think the level that Salah is playing at, guys, is guys. It's phenomenal, guys. You know what I mean? I think definitely
it's something special.
It's a Ballon d'Or type level of form. And I definitely feel that he does deserve like a £400,000, but not a £500,000, but a £400,000, and maybe you can get a Van Dijk to a £300,000 and a Mane to a £300,000, you know, and a Henderson to a £250,000. That I agree with, but not £500,000.
I think at the end of the day, of course I wouldn't. I mean, if Salah leaves, I mean, I wouldn't cry. I think with Liverpool, if you're managing a team, you need to have policies. If you have your policies, no one can be more important. Yes, there can be exceptions at time, but in a situation like this, I think Liverpool will look at what is the purpose of them having a thing of saying, if a player reaches 30, they're not going to be giving him maybe a long contract for certain reasons or what. And the reasons, no matter how good he is, they have their reasons for it, and they should try to stick to that. Otherwise, then they break their system, you know. And also, if you look at it, no player is going to. I mean, now Ronaldo and them are showing. I mean, and I think Salah. I mean, with his sort of discipline, he can go on for a very long time, you know. He can probably go on for another 4 years. He can still, I think, contribute a lot. I don't think. He could go on for a pretty long time, but. I think as well, at the end of the day, like Liverpool, do they change their policy because of Salah, or do they continue doing what their policy is and, you know, just cut the guy off? But at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is that the players have an end, you know, the club continues. And so if that's what they say, they better be doing their job well and trying to look for someone that will obviously be part of the new Liverpool.
That's very philosophical, Wonga. It's a good negotiating tactic as well. You just take one, you take Salah outside, you point at the club, you go, this was here before you got here, you know. It'll be here when you've gone. It's 400K and that's that. Then you throw him a brown paper bag and you walk away.
One thing I want to highlight, and the reason I asked all of you when all of this came up the first time, and I said, what did you make of the interview? Because obviously, as Liverpool fans, we've somewhat been through this before when Sterling's agent did this, organized the conversation with Sky Sports. There were still talks about whether or not he's going to renew a contract. He wanted more money. He ended up going to Man City. But when that interview was conducted, he was painted as a villain. It was a wrong thing. He's exploiting the club. He was completely... Now Salah does it. And arguably, what's the interesting from the timing perspective, Klopp's also pushing the narrative, you know, this is the best player in the world. He's pushing the narrative. It's twofold. As a manager, if I can make the player believe he's the best player in the world, he's going to be playing better, which is working. And also, tell the club to give this player what he wants because I want to keep him because I'm only here for X amount of time and I want the best player with me. Fair enough. But now the situation is, you know, do they break the structure according to what Wonga was saying? But from the instigation part, I want to get your opinions. Was this the right thing for the player to do or was it the wrong thing for the player to do? I mean, when you're looking at it now with another lens, was it something generally for the club or was it? And I mean, Pum says 500 a week now shows the player is selfish. And I found that very interesting that within a week, the asking price jumped from 400 to 500.
But that could also be a negotiating tactic. That could be Liverpool's not coming to the party with 400. He has a fantastic week. And then the agent comes back and says, well, now it's 500. They're still ready for 400, but it's the gamesmanship of it, you know? Like, why not? He just scored a hat-trick at Old Trafford. If you're going to mess around with 400, there's people willing to pay 500 for this player. You know, if you went to PSG, Bayern, Newcastle, City, they'd pay that money. Why won't you pay that money? And I think it's just kind of – so it's also hard to know in isolation, you know, to your point around this particular interview, it's – The Sterling one is slightly different because Sterling was looking for something that he hadn't. He was looking, asking Liverpool to look at what he was going to be, not what he was today. Whereas Salah's asking what I'm going to be now. And you could argue that Sterling did live up to what he thought he could achieve. He's become a phenomenal player. Salah's saying, I'm worth this now. I'm doing this now. So there is a slight difference. The other side of it is also it's hard to know whether these things were a good idea or not until a little bit later. You know, the Harry Kane one, there was a good example. They did that interview where they were like, oh, the deal is done. And at the time, it looked like a very smart move from Kane because it felt like it was tipping Levy's hand. It turned out that a lot of what they said in the interview was completely inaccurate, and Levy was just like, well, that's just nothing doing. So he ended up looking stupid in retrospect. And so I think it'll be a case of we need to wait and see what the actual fallout is before we can really say whether it was a good move or a bad move. If he ends up getting his 400 or his 500K, then, you know, then I think then we'll be able to say. Is that official, Fooms? Or are you saying, offer now? Like, is it a offer now, 450K? Or is it like, offer now, 450K? You know, it's sort of, but yeah, which, either way, in terms of the what he brings, even 500K is reasonable if that's within the structure of what Liverpool can offer. Yeah. I don't know that it is because Liverpool doesn't have as much money as the likes of Chelsea and them. And I think that's where, you know, it's sort of, there's always going to be that challenge because if you do that, like Celo said, you're going to have a player who's on significantly more than players who, although Salah is arguably, and I agree, I think at the moment, best player in the world, Mane's not a terrible player either. And he'll be saying, I can only do my job and nobody can do my job better than me. So if he's on 100%. 450, 500, why aren't I close to that too?
And he did that before.
Yeah. And fair play to him because he's also, I mean, yeah, Mane's not the best player in the world, but he's probably in the top three players in Liverpool at the moment. So why shouldn't he be paid as such? And, you know, so you will create those kind of challenges. But maybe they could do that deal with Nike. You never know. Just they get all the players to tattoo the chick under their eye. Extra 100. Cha-cha.
Wong, what did you want to add there?
Oh, no. I just wanted to say that obviously when they also, you don't want, obviously I'm pretty sure part of it is, you know, the club don't want to be like, be looking like they, you know, Salah, we bow down to you. Yes, yeah, take this, you know. They've also got their foot to stand on. But I think, you know, they're going to show that, look, we are bigger than you. You know, you are here. Not we are behind you. You know, you are in us. And I think they're trying to show that. So, you know what? I mean, come on.
The family.
that's exactly what. Definitely that's part of what's going on there. But, it's the game has changed. This thing of people, the 30, that's why I say Liverpool I think at some point, it probably will be soon, they will change this policy of 30 years old because it's changing now. Guys are prolonging their careers with, and Salah's a player that looks after himself. He's not going to fade. He's not going to fade anytime soon. I think he's still got another, three, 5 years. I think Liverpool need to revise the policy in some way. Because I think it's time to let go of a player like Salah because of a policy like that. That's been there for how long now? I think they need to revise it.
Just after that, Wonga, Akil saying, Arsenal did the same with Aubameyang. He was on fire and the club gave him what he wanted. We all know what happened afterwards. So
he was replaced with a clone and disappeared for a year.
Yeah, you see, but there's a lot. Arsenal, Aubameyang. But you see, they gave Aubameyang that salary. Then they take away the guy who's feeding in the goals as well. The whole team plays now differently, you know. I don't think it's just Aubameyang salary that was. Because when Aubameyang came in there, when he came in there, he was firing.
Why is Sam only joining in now, man? Yo, wow, bro.
And I mean,
that's a fine, Sam. That's a fine for you.
Look at...
gentlemen. Okay, it's that time. We need to announce the winner, right, for the T-shirt.
So how are we doing this?
I will see you now. Give me a second. I just need to share.
Are there any warm balls that we have to take out? Like, you know, like in the Champions League.
The cold.
Why are they warm?
I don't know if they're warm.
Listen.
Match fixing.
They say there's match fixing. There's warm balls you take out and you feel it's warm. And then that's how Man City always gets rubbish group opponents.
That makes sense. Okay. There's no warm balls on this show.
Speak for yourself. I've been sat here a long time.
How are you doing the giveaway?
I'll show you now.
He's going to literally spin this. He's going to spin. I'm sure he's going to spin the thing in front of our eyes. Maybe it's a virtual spin.
Now he's left the show.
Oh, hectic.
That was dramatic. Maybe he's going to appear in someone's living room and give them the T-shirt.
Abracadabra.
Pretty impressive. The winner's just going to fall asleep and then wake up wearing the shirt.
Oh, goodness me.
Unbelievable. Now he's back.
So new machine, things haven't all been set up. Anyway, I think we're good to go now. Hold on. Okay. Yes. Okay. Can you guys see the screen? Holy shit. What's going on there?
Yes.
This is Inception, gents. You're seeing behind.
This is like the behind the scenes. Like
a room with 10 mirrors.
You see the screen now? It's only because I'm using one screen.
Okay, yes, we can.
Okay. Yes. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Go.
Is there no sound? Son of a...
Who wants to take a guess?
There's maybe no sound, booms. But anyway, keep going, guys.
I say
the
lady.
Booms!
Oh.
My God! Oh my God!
There we go.
Under the Arsenal man. Yes.
Arsenal, yeah,
Mandela's
of Arsenal, man. Yeah,
Mandela. Yeah, it's obvious, Mandela. This is our week, boy. This is our week.
There we go. Pums, you were pretty close. Congrats, Mandela, on winning yourself a limited edition family tee from Goal Lounge. Gentlemen, you want to say congrats? Come on.
Yeah, well done.
Well done, Ghana. Well done, Mandela. I went to Boston with them, so well done. At least
some of them. Nice. So I can give you the shirt and you can pass it on. Maybe swing over there with the. Darling brew.
You see now, this guy.
It's already.
Precious of the world.
All right, gentlemen, final thoughts.
Okay, my final thoughts. Well, it's not a thought, but yeah, maybe something you guys can think about. Arsenal. You know, I don't know if you guys go on the social media of your teams and stuff. You see on their birthdays, they usually... post out. I don't know if you guys, your teams do that, but they on Arsenal, they post out on the guys' birthdays and they say, like, this is Lundberg's birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to Thierry Henry. Happy birthday to all those guys, even the recent ones. And Mesut Ozil didn't get a message this year.
But did Gunnosaurus? Did Gunnosaurus say happy birthday to
Ozil? Gunnosaurus
getting a message. I don't know about that, but the funny thing was Ozil didn't get one and he has gotten in the past. So I don't know if you want to think about that, but yeah, that I think it's a very funny thing.
You also said that Henri didn't give you one because we did try our best.
Ah, no, not sad about that.
I just like it.
Cello, final thoughts from your side.
Hey, man. My team needs to get a new coach. That's my final thoughts. We definitely need a change. Hey, man. Like, I know probably Man United, I don't know. They still want to give him a chance, but listen, at the end of the day, this guy can't take us any further. You know, there's really good managers in the Premier League. Thomas Tuchel, Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, all these three managers won something in a top five league before coming to coach the respective clubs, whether it was German Cups or German Leagues or La Ligas. These guys are proven winners. And we've got a guy who just won a league title in Norway. A league that's out at the top 10. That's not good enough.
Although you could argue, how many of those other coaches have won a league title in Norway?
Yeah, there you go, man. Tell them.
Yeah.
Let him stay.
Could they do it on a cold Tuesday night in Mold?
And they play on artificial grounds.
Artificial grounds. You're right.
That's true. Snow rages and the threat of Viking invasions going on. You know, it's a lot of pressure.
Guys.
Oh, he's gonna stay up forever, dude.
Oh, why?
Thanks, Ole. Thank you, Ole. At least they've lost.
Why did he come towards the end? He didn't want to hear all the negative things, eh, Cedo? He comes towards the end.
Yeah, man. You didn't want to hear the cussing and everything. Yeah.
Ole, people are not happy. They want your head. That's all I'm saying. Matt, final words from your side.
Oof! I just hope it gets better for Spurs. Just want to see some coherent kind of attacking play, and I don't know. We'll see. We will see. I want last week again, not this week. Maybe we could play Newcastle every week until they spend some money. That'd be great.
That's not a bad idea. Gents, I just want to comment on the fact that Pums, obviously our Chelsea fan who comes and joins us week in, week out. I mean, they hit 7 goals with our 2 strikers and we didn't comment on that at all. And they top of the log. So yeah, Top of the log. Yeah, well, thanks for contributing there.
Norwich.
We're gonna end off. But you can blame Mosa for Norwich. That because he just disappears.
Norwich opens the goals for everyone. Come on, doesn't count. That's all good.
It's open testing at Norwich.
Everyone's gonna collect 3 points there. Let's go.
We can relegate them now, guys. Please.
Yeah, they're gone.
-21 goal difference.
They must just go right, on holiday and we just give 3 points. Play one game less.
Remember, if you don't know what to
be cool.
Be cool. Just like Ole.